welcome to Radio Free Nintendo, episode 253. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me today, James Jones.
James Jones 7.
James Jones 7. Greg Leahy.
Hello. Not numbered.
And unfortunately, John is out again this week. He's having some work troubles, we do very much hope to have him back next week, and he apologizes. Instead, we have, as a very special guest, you may know him from Weekend Confirmed. You may know him from EGM. You may know him from N64 HQ. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend Billy Berghammer.
Billy Berghammer 3D Land 3D? 3?
7.
The problem is, when you say that many things that someone else has been, I just always think it's going to be Troy McClure.
I'm Troy McClure.
All right. Well, it's great to have Billy back on. It's been a while, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course, I didn't mention it, but Billy also sort of invented our website and was my boss at one time.
Yes. I also invented the internets where the site takes place. So.
Well, you're old enough to have done that. So.
That's true. But congratulations on hitting 250, and you guys are doing a great job. I listened to the last show. I really enjoyed it. So.
Thanks, man.
All the 3DS talk was an interesting switch from a lot that I'd seen on Twitter and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, I was surprised when I you know, I listen to a lot of gaming podcasts, and I was surprised when I heard other people talking on that topic that a lot of people were really negative on it, where they, instead of talking about, well, this is a good thing, it's a chance for Nintendo to kind of fix 3DS and make it successful after all, when it looked like it was going badly, and maybe giving Nintendo a little bit of credit for actually doing something that seems pretty smart and seems like probably the right thing to do by their customers, either their existing customers or their future customers. Instead, people kind of took it as like yet another opportunity to talk about how iPhone is killing everything. And I'm not necessarily disagreeing with that stance. I just don't think they added very much to the conversation on that front. I think whether iPhone kills portable gaming is really up in the air, and I feel like kind of everything that could be said about it has already been said about it. So I would prefer to take the 3DS news as an opportunity to talk about 3DS.
Yeah, and
I think that's what we did.
I think a lot of people blamed the 3D of it, and I was actually quite surprised about that, because I think there are many other reasons why the 3DS has faced challenges, like software and cost and battery life and...
Software again.
Software.
We can repeat that a few more times, actually.
Yeah, I think very few people were waiting to buy a 3DS because of battery life. I think that's a problem for people who already own it. That's something that people complain about because they have to deal with it. But if you don't own a 3DS, I really doubt the battery life is a significant barrier.
I still think we talked about this last week, people who are thinking about the next revision.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That could be a reason.
Yeah, and the battery rolls into that, but it's a lot of other things, too.
Yeah, I agree with the battery life on the next version of the 3DS and all that, because I actually played through Zelda and marathoned through it, and I had to keep my 3DS plugged in most of the time. Hmm. And I used the 3D effect on Zelda, and I thought it looked gorgeous, but I wanted to play through it using all of it. And to marathon it, there's no way. 3 hours, thing's dead, so...
You take a hit on 3D, for sure.
Yeah, I would say I played it until the battery died, and that was when I knew I had to stop playing. But in the end, because I've beaten the game so many times, that wasn't a huge crisis, because it still didn't take that long. But
it's going to be a problem if it's something that you really like, because you like to...
Or if it's something I don't know the answer to all the puzzles.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have an update on Retroactive. The poll was up for about 2 weeks, and we had the largest number of votes of all time, nearly 100 votes, which... I'm very proud of, and I'm glad to see that it's trending upward. Every time we do this, we get more and more participation. But I have to say, that is a small percentage of our listenership. So let me just say, I mean, obviously it's too late for this one, but if you listen to this show, I really would love for you to participate in Retroactive. The more people that we have participating, the less likely we are to get a poor selection such as Killer 7, which is the winner of this poll.
Fuck me.
In all deference to the considerable percentage of people who voted for it, I agree with the sentiment that it will be an interesting conversation, but I think a lot of people are voting for this knowing that they don't have to play it, and
yes.
And we do. So let me just take this opportunity to get it out of my system. Fuck you guys.
See, this is why we took away the democratic powers for at least one or two of these.
I could do it again. I could do
right.
It again. Anytime.
This is no longer a democracy, people.
Yeah, so Killer 7 won, actually by a pretty good margin. Obviously, people are interested in it. And let me just say this, if you voted for Killer 7, I expect you to play it. and actually post in the thread.
Or I'll kill you.
You're in this with me, man. Get in this trench. We're going to do this together, okay? Rogue Leader came in second place. That will show up again when we do a second chance poll. And Baten Kaitos Origins bringing up third. Kind of a distant third, sadly. I was looking forward to maybe a chance to play that. I mean, I had an interest in playing all of these games, either for the first or the second time, but Killer 7 probably would have been my last choice. It's going to be interesting. Probably in about 2 weeks, we will begin discussing Killer 7 on the show. I don't know if it will qualify for a two-week treatment or not. We'll talk about it at least one episode, maybe two, depending on how things go. And we'll try to get John in on the action for that, because you know how he is about first-person shooters.
Not really a typical first-person shooter.
Yeah. Billy, have you ever played Killer 7?
I have played some of it. I was actually just looking at my stack of GameCube games. I'm like, actually, I have that.
Your game collection is very impressive, by the way.
Well, I kind of do Planet GameCube and everything like that. I kind of do have a ridiculous GameCube collection, but yeah. I never finished it, and I should. I might actually jump in on this.
Well, you're welcome to. I mean, you can at least post in the thread, and if you are available, we'd be happy to have you back to talk about it again. I could say that Carl is definitely on the hook to come in. and be a guest to discuss Killer 7, so you can look forward to that.
I'd be really curious to see if Rogue Leader holds up, because, man, I remember back in the day, that game was one of the best.
That's why we put it in there, yeah.
It's a little rough.
I think technically it's incredibly impressive to this day. I think there are some design issues that maybe we overlooked in that era, and it was a launch game. So, I mean, there is a certain launch
right.
fever that takes over people. And
we beat it at the Cube Club.
Wow. Okay. That's impressive. I mean, it's not a terribly short game. It would take at least a couple hours.
Well, we did it in consecutive evenings, and then we just basically would rotate the controller between, like, three or four people. Yeah, we unlocked secrets, like, way before the game even came out and took pictures.
Oh, nice.
And
nice, nice. The good old days, man.
Yeah, good times.
Oh, wow. So, okay, we're going to be playing Killer 7. Honestly, seriously, thank you, everybody, for participating. And it's not over. There's a lot of participation left to be done. So by the time the show goes up, there will be a forum thread to begin the discussion. And oh, boy, is there going to be some discussion of this game. And actually, we're going to talk maybe a little bit more about Suda 51 here in a few minutes. But I figured I would kick off new business. I've got some pretty fun stuff here, and I think actually Billy will be able to chime in on both of these games. So for new business this week, I wanted to talk about, first up, Final Fantasy III or Final Fantasy VI, whatever, the one that came out on Virtual Console a couple months ago. I had turned it on a couple times, but this week I really put some hours into it. I've played it for several hours now. And this is a game that, man, playing this on Virtual Console really takes me back, because this game probably influenced my taste in gaming and it fueled my interest in gaming at a point where it had been waning for a while. I was kind of obsessed with it as a teenager in the mid-90s. And so to go back and play it now brings me back to probably hundreds of hours of gaming in a time of my life where I wasn't playing that many other games. There wasn't that much other stuff late in the Super NES, and there was a bad period before N64 came out. So, and I think I've probably played through FF3 seven or eight times, I would guess. And it's longer than Chrono Trigger. This is at least 30 to 35 hours. That's probably my quickest time to ever beat it. And I've had sessions that were over 50. So I know this game really, really well, but at this point, it has actually been a pretty long time since I went through it. So it's really, there are aspects of it that I'm pretty rusty on, and that are really bringing a smile to my face as I sort of find something. Oh yeah, that's here, right? But I guess the main thing I want to say about it is that Final Fantasy VI, it holds up really well in a couple of different ways. I mean, first off, as I've mentioned before, it is a really advanced Super NES game. So it has a really nice graphics engine. For instance, the entire world map is a Mode 7 texture. So normally you see it from top down and it looks pretty sharp and detailed, and it has, the whole game has this really great color palette of kind of earth tones. So it has this really nice art style that it brings it a kind of a more mature adult feel than you get from a lot of other Super Nintendo games, where they tended to use very bright color palettes, very like extreme, almost garish colors to make things stand out. And Final Fantasy III is one of the few games I can think of on the platform that really does prefer a more muted palette. I think actually ActRaiser is probably another example of that, but not a whole lot in between. So I really appreciate the fact that it looks the way that it does. And then also the music is just absolutely superb. And yeah, it's really nostalgic for me to listen to this stuff, but also I still think it just sounds really good.
It does. I'd never played it before, so I didn't have that baggage, you know, and it's just very pleasant to listen to.
Yeah. And I'm not even to the Opera House yet, so I've still got that to look forward to. But the music is just spectacular. And also, I'm not to the World of Ruin yet, but I just remember the incredible feeling when you first get to the World of Ruin, which is about halfway through the game, approximately, the realization that they've actually changed the world map music and that it will never go back to the way it was before. And that, it, more than anything, probably, even more than the visual design of the second half of the game, I think the change in the world map music, which you've heard so much prior to that, and the realization that it is gone, that probably hits home, because, quite frankly, I mean, if you play it right, you're not going to lose any of the playable characters. So the game has to be careful about transmitting the feeling that things have really changed forever in a permanent way. And that was really key that they deliver that, because no RPG had really ever done that before, I don't think. Not on a world basis, the way that it does. And so to do that without killing off any of your main characters, they have to be really crafty about how they pull across that emotional impact. And I think they did it in a really excellent way. And the music's a big part of that, a surprisingly big part of it. Man, I have so many other sort of scattered thoughts. I mean, I love the way that the game very early on introduces you to the idea that your party can be broken up into pieces. And especially when you're on the raft and everyone's separated and you get this sort of selection screen where you control the Moogle and you have to choose one of three different paths. And eventually you have to do all three of them. And eventually they converge back together. And in the grand scheme of the game, that's a short section. It's only, you know, if all three of them together shouldn't take you more than 5 hours, probably. But it establishes this breadth of storytelling that I don't think you had seen before, except maybe in Dragon Quest IV, which handled it in a more sequential, linear way. But in Final Fantasy VI, they say, okay, this story is complex enough that we're actually going to have to split up your characters and have them do things in parallel, so that you can see what's going on in different parts of the world, and so that you can be introduced to a lot of different characters at essentially the same point on the timeline. So that when we bring everybody back together, you're back actually in Narsh, you're back in the place where you started the game, but you have a completely different scope of what's going on in this world and what the stakes are in this story. And you have a lot more characters to share that experience with. It's a pretty amazing thing that I think you could overlook, especially if, like me, you've played the game so many times that you don't really step back to think about what they're doing there. And one last thing, this is really kind of trivial, but now that I'm playing this on the classic controller, I can actually do some of these blitzes that were almost impossible on the Super Nintendo D-pad. Especially the fire dance is very, very difficult to do on the Super Nintendo pad. I know it's been a stream of consciousness here, but I know Greg has talked about it before, but James and Billy, I'd like to get your thoughts on this game, because I'm sure you've both played it.
Like a decade ago.
I will be totally honest with you, I've never played it. So
dude, $8. $8 gets you one of the best games ever made. You have to do it. You have to play this, Billy. You are going to freak out. I know how you love Mass Effect, and I know how you love...
It's just like Mass Effect. It's completely the same.
Well, no, but I actually have an actual connection to Mass Effect. I thought of this the other day while I was playing Final Fantasy VI. There's a scene when all the stories converge back together at Narsh where the characters actually do a walk and talk. There's a story scene of all these characters are moving to a new place in the town where they have to set stage for this big battle scene that's going to come up. And instead of just transporting you there, the game actually uses a storytelling device where they cut between different groups of characters. They sort of pair off in different combinations and interact with each other. And as they're doing this, they're all traveling up towards this destination. And it made me think of Mass Effect 2, where that was actually a feature that they put in the game, where the characters could actually move around and still have a conversation.
Also connects it to every network television show made in the last 10 years.
Yeah, Aaron Sorkin. he learned all of his tricks from Final Fantasy VI, is what I'm trying to say. So this game deserves an Oscar. It is an amazing game. Billy, you got to play it, man. Do you like Chrono Trigger?
Here lies another embarrassing fact about me. I've never played Chrono Trigger, and I get so much shit for that.
James dropping from the call right now.
So that being said, if I was going to go back and play an older Square RPG, that would definitely be the one that I hit first.
I'm not going to disagree with you, because I love these games almost equally, but don't stop at Chrono Trigger. You got to play FF3 too, because they're almost two sides of the same coin.
Okay.
They're both incredible, and they're both super cheap and easy to access now. So there's no excuse, dude. You got to do it.
I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of shit in the forums for that, but...
Mm-hmm. Deservedly so. Even John Lindemann has played Chrono Trigger.
Beating it. Not just played it. He's actually beating it, though.
I don't believe it. He doesn't beat games.
He beat this one. I think we have a pretty good chronicle of the experience.
He's bloody good at faking it. If he didn't,
he was just reading an FAQ while doing the podcast. Is all.
Well, the other game I played this week, which I'm sure that you have played, Billy, is Bulletstorm.
Yep.
Which has again a lot in common with Final Fantasy VI. Yeah, Bulletstorm is, it looks, and in some ways it is very much a first-person version of Gears of War. It's all the style and the impact and the feel of Gears of War, except you don't really use cover much, and it's a first-person shooter, which does kind of change the way you interact with the environment and with the enemies. But I enjoyed it very much. I mean, I like Gears of War too. I think Bulletstorm does carve out its own personality. In some ways, it carves out too much of its own personality. I mean, the whole comedic stylings of this game are very inconsistent. Obviously, it's incredibly profane and over the top and, you know, dick tits. And some of that stuff's I found surprisingly funny, like honestly funny. Most of it came later in the game. A lot of the stuff in the beginning is just really kind of cringeworthy. But as you go through the game, I think it does kind of find its own voice. And especially there's a general type character who you're trying to pursue. And when you finally find him, you kind of realize why your main characters talk the way they do, because they were trained by this guy. And the best way I can describe this guy, he's kind of, do you remember Gary Oldman's character in The Fifth Element?
Oh, dear.
When he was doing the Southern accent.
Yeah. This general character, he's basically that, except more evil, and he's been locked in a cave studying a profanity dictionary for a while. And he's honestly really funny. At first, I thought he would be really annoying, and then as you spend more time with him, I found that he was probably the best written character in the game. So I was surprised by that. So the story and the writing and the voice acting are all kind of hit or miss for me, but the action is definitely really fun. I love the scoring mechanic. I love that someone is actually trying to put new gameplay mechanics into first-person shooter. And by doing so, they really do change the way that the game feels, and they change the way that you think about how you play the game. And I very much appreciate that, and I think it's done very well. I think there's probably a lot more you could do with it, but the using of the leash to manipulate your enemies and kicking things, and setting up explosives, and honestly, the guns that they give you are really creative, and most of them are very, very, very satisfying and fun to use. Even the very last one is this rocket launcher that fires drills. And I thought it was one of the best weapons I've ever used in a first-person shooter. And it actually took me back to the appeal of, like, the very first couple of Turok games, where they had this, you know, these wacky weapons and these crazy death animations. And I feel like this is the modern version of that, except it's done better in Bulletstorm, because the actual shooting gameplay is tight, whereas in Turok it was a little bit iffy a lot of times.
A lot of times. I do agree with you, like, when I saw some of the initial trailers and when I even saw the games at different events and things like that, you know, the language, I was just like, really? Do we need this 13-year-old vulgarity, you know, the whole dick tits thing? And there, I will completely agree with you. Later on in the game, I laughed multiple times. The game actually makes fun of itself at points, so it's funny. The action is great, the arcade sort of stuff and setting up combos, kind of like the way the club was, or even Tony Hawk, you know, it was very appealing to me, and I really enjoyed it. And even the challenge levels and, you know, the replayability, I haven't really done too much of. I think some other games came out around the same time, but it's fun. It's worth taking a look at. So I did think it was a lot more different from Gears than you did, but Gears seems more bro-y, you know, the co-op and all that sort of thing. Like, I thought Gears was a lot different. Plus, it's a lot darker.
Yeah, that's one thing that surprised me, is that Bulletstorm's really colorful and vibrant, the art style to it. And I really appreciated that, because Gears can get a little bit depressing in the way that the visuals are designed.
Oh, yeah, more brown and gray and red, you know, and this is definitely different.
Yeah, I'll be, you know, John is a big fan of first-person shooters, and I don't think he's played Bulletstorm, but
He probably owns it, though.
He probably owns it, so maybe he'll get around to it. I think he would like it a lot, and I'd like to hear what his thoughts are on it, because I think I've played a number of first-person shooters lately. I never talked about it on the show, but I did rent Killzone 3 and played it for a few hours and really did not like it at all. I couldn't get into it. I didn't even make it to the part where you get the jetpack, because everything before that I found to be kind of interminable. I couldn't stand it. And so I sent it back and I said, man, I hope the next one's better. And luckily it was. So I think this is one of the better shooters I've played in quite a while. And I think if you're down on the whole Modern Warfare thing or even on Gears or Killzone, I think this has a number of elements that might appeal to you more. Okay, well, I've talked way too much so far in the show. So, Billy, why don't you tell us a little bit about your 3DS exploits and hopes for the future?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I was actually on vacation for about 8 or 9 days at the end of the month. So the only things I brought with me was my iPhone and my 3DS. And so we were camping at a cabin and that sort of thing. So there was some gaming done, but I've had fun with my 3DS. I do enjoy the system a lot. You know, obviously I have the same gripes that everybody else does, you know, lack of software. You know, even the download space, like I've been messing around. I've yet to buy any DSiWare yet. I haven't found anything in there that's made me really say, yes, I need to do that, but
fireplace.
But there's, you know, you go through the shop, and first of all, I don't think it's really organized really well.
No, it's not.
Organized?
The folder names are kind of stupid. I think they need to take a look at, you know, how Xbox shows their games and sort of, you know. But the one thing I found kind of hilarious is there's only 3 3D download games right now. That to me is a big mistake. You know, you're trying to push this new system, and right now you only have 3 games. One or 2 of them are basically rehashes with a 3D layer slapped on top of it.
Yes.
And then the golf game. So, well, and on top of all of it, it's all very expensive in comparison to things that I'm used to in iOS, where I can download anything for 99 cents generally, up to a couple bucks, but you know, $6.99 or something for Xevious. I was like, really? Come on, man.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, what's amusing is that a lot of the DSiWare is bad iOS ports, and many times it costs multiple times the value of the iOS software.
Including 3D Let's Golf, by the way.
Yeah, at least that's a little bit different.
Yeah, it's in 3D, but it's still an iPhone game.
Like Xenonia, for example, is an iOS game, but it costs like twice as much on DSiWare.
I mean, I'm going to guess that the reason for that is, you know, Nintendo might take a bigger cut, or
doesn't Apple take 40%?
It's their pricing scheme.
Right.
As Iwata went to great pains to point out GDC this year, you know, they have this very high priority of preserving the value of games. And so anything that gets on their store, even if it is a bit of a sloppy production. They can't afford to have it be priced in line with what it would be on the iOS, otherwise it's going to sort of drag everything down. And so they wouldn't be so comfortable charging what they charge for Virtual Console games anymore, or they, you know, all this other stuff. So
right.
I mean, with DSi, it was specifically slotted, wasn't it? Like 200 points, 500 points, 800
yes.
points. It had to be in one of those boxes.
Yeah, what a foolish thing.
That's why Disco Lite, which is literally a screensaver, costs 200 points.
Yeah. So it's all part of their view that, you know, you have to have some sort of controls on pricing to avoid a race to the bottom and the devaluation of old software.
Well, I think Iwata's also, as he's mentioned quite a bit, is that he's concerned that there's a lack of hardware and software sales, you know, so I think if they're going to see any serious traction in there, I mean, I don't know how well these games are selling, but I'm not going to spend $12 on a 3D golf game or whatever that, I forget what it costs, but I mean, it just was, everything just seemed like it was a lot. But, and I forgot my AR card, so I downloaded them. I downloaded them on my iPhone, which works really, really well as long as you put the brightness settings all the way and use it that way. And my friends really got a kick out of it. It's cool, you know, and, but yeah, you know, I want more Street Pass stuff. Obviously, at E3, it was so great because it was just like clearing off your 3DS, you know, every 2 seconds because it would be full. Like, that's great, but I haven't had a hit since then.
Yeah.
Well, supposedly they're going to have more stuff for the Street Pass Plaza or whatever by the end of the year. They're saying that they've heard that people are already done with it, so they want to add new things.
Yeah, I'm done with it.
Well, I mean, that would be great if there were people to Street Pass with.
Well, but that's where the price cut comes in.
Yeah,
they've only sold a few hundred thousand units, so Street Pass will become more effective as they sell more hardware.
But, I mean, I love the system. You know, I like the games. You know, I loved playing through Zelda again. I had only played it the initial time that I did on the 64, even though I have it for GameCube. And Pilot Wings I thought was fantastic, even though it is short. But just like you guys, I'm waiting for compelling software.
Billy, did you play anything at E3, maybe third-party-wise, that you're looking forward to?
Third-party-wise? I don't think so.
I played a few that I thought were pretty good, but they were hard to find.
You know, I hit the main Nintendo titles. I thought Mario was good. I do think it was, as you guys said last week, the run button just kind of seems ridiculous, considering now we have an analog-type slide pad, so why not utilize it? It just seems kind of silly, but I liked it. Someone said that it reminded them of Crash Bandicoot.
Yeah, I think that's from the first level where you are head on sort of running into the screen. But that doesn't seem to be like it's going to be necessarily a big part of the game. But that is what you could do, really, is like it's these 2D type layouts, but in 3D, and they're kind of winding a different angle. So sometimes you'll be going into the screen, sometimes you're coming back towards the screen, sometimes it's like a 45-degree angle, you know, with all these fixed cameras. So I think that's probably what they mean rather than anything more substantive.
Yeah, I mean, I also thought the camera was too tight on Mario. Like, I would like to see it pan back a little bit.
I wish I could tilt it up and down more.
Yes, but I am a big Mario guy, so I'm looking forward to that. Mario Kart, I was happily surprised with, even though I was a little nervous once there were different vehicles back in, because I really did not like Mario Kart for Wii. The motorcycles I just thought were awful, but I'm more of a Mario Kart purist, so I'm excited for that. And Luigi's Mansion, I was very surprised that they're making a sequel. I played the shit out of the first one, so even though it's short, like, I'm excited there's another one, and that played very well, so. And Star Fox, yeah, I completely agree with what you guys said last week about the fact that it's just stupid that they don't have an online version of the multiplayer, but surprise.
considering that Dylan Cuthbert made an online Star Fox game for the DS, it's kind of stupid.
It is.
I know what I'm doing, guys, but not today.
No, I don't think it's his fault.
No, definitely not. It's probably just a question of priorities. I mean, there was Iwata asks recently, they talked about the fact that Miyamoto came in very late and said, there's no gyro control in this. Put gyro control in this. So maybe that maybe that's where the development
he just
time
can't
went.
Leave, he just can't leave Star Fox alone, can he? Hold on, I'm going to come in here and mess this up.
Yep.
Well, it doesn't mess it up. It's optional. I can't mess it up that. But you know, maybe you never know.
Well, actually, apparently, I read the Iwata ask, which is fascinating. And apparently what Miyamoto said was, wait, you don't have any features in here to make it worth people buying if they already got it on Virtual Console. In which case, I would say, yeah, I wish he had come in a lot earlier and made that comment, because I don't think the gyro controls are quite adequate to make up that difference.
Hey, look, there's also a camera of your face. You can get still images of when you lose. Problem solved.
I was really hoping they'd put in Star Fox 2 as a secret bonus thing.
That would be like 3DSware.
Well, okay, fine. Do that. But
yeah, I'd be happy with that.
Or at least, you know, Star Fox, unlike Zelda, I mean, Ocarina, I wouldn't expect them to do an extra dungeon. But Star Fox 64 is 15 levels long. I don't think it's asking that much to add one more level. And I don't think it's going to break the fiction or, you know, screw up the structure of that game to do it that way. And I would have liked to have seen some original content.
I would have liked to see an original content in Zelda as well. I mean, I thought it was so hilarious that Nintendo was pimping the extra features in this game, because there weren't any. Like, you know, okay, Master Quest, oh, that's been available before. That's not a big deal. The boss battle mode, which is completely buried in the game, and you access it through your fucking house. Like, I was like...
Yeah, you have to go back to your house and sleep in your bed. It makes no sense.
I had to look online where to access it, because I figured after I beat the game, it would, like, unlock as a menu thing, but no.
No, there's, like, one person in the entire game who says, you know, if you go back to your house, you can replay the... It's like, the fuck? What if I never talked to him?
Yeah, I don't remember seeing that, but...
It's just one dude in the middle of town. It's like, why do you know about my bed? What are you doing in my dreams?
It's just... I would have liked more. You know, there's one new music track in the entire game. They're pimping all this orchestra stuff. They could have thrown that in there. I mean, granted, I'm not a programmer. I don't know what that all takes to get it done, which I'm assuming is a lot more than I believe personally, but...
Yeah, and the weird thing with Zelda's music is the dynamic nature of it, you know, in terms of Hyrule Field and like how it changes and all that. I would have imagined making it dynamic with orchestrated elements would have been tricky. And apparently it was Koji Kondo that said, let's just do it exactly the same way as it was before, rather than enhancing it, so... That's that. But I think if you know, Star Fox is a little different. It's not that much higher fidelity, but the soundtrack sounds like the instrument quality is somewhat better.
Well, I think, Johnny, you said they're not going to get my $40. Like, I think they're realizing they need to make these games worthwhile for people to go and drop the money again, because their fan base are the people that own these games on multiple systems.
Yeah, I mean, I know they're adding 3D. I know they're doing a few things. But to me, this feels like the whole NES Classics for Game Boy Advance, where it's like, here's a really old game, pay full price for it. And I'm like, no, I want to play this old game. I would buy this, but you guys are on a completely different economy than me.
It's true. It's true. And I think Nintendo's actually losing a lot of money on the GBA games that they're going to be releasing, because those games would have sold.
Well, I'm not complaining about that I'm going to get them for free.
Either am I. But let's just say I want more stuff added to the remakes. Sadly, I'll still buy Star Fox.
The problem is that they've already been chosen to be released at all for their relative brevity and simplicity of development. So they're never going to apply the most effort to them, unfortunately. That's just the nature of what they are. So, and once we get to the point, presumably, where they've got projects that they've been able to give more sort of care and attention, they'll be the original ones. And hopefully they'll be able to show in its quality.
Mm-hmm. I agree. But outside of 3DS, it's funny that Killer 7 was brought up for the game, but I'm playing Shadows of the Damned currently, which, if you haven't gone out and played it yet, it did sell like crap, but I think that's mainly because it wasn't marketed at all and really wasn't promoted too much. But I picked it up for word of mouth. I was curious about it, and it's a good game. It is a lot of fun, but it does have its fair share of problems. But I do think if you have followed, you know, Grasshopper or Suda's games in the past, it's the most polished one.
Is that because he didn't do the gameplay?
No, I also think it's, you know, it helps that EA was on top of them. But like, If you don't know anything about the game, you play as Garcia Hotspur, who is a demon hunter, and he's going to hell to rescue his lady friend Paula. And the vulgarity of Suda's games have definitely gone into this game.
Garcia fucking Hotspur, as it were.
Oh God, it's one of those where that's his middle name, like Casey fucking Ryback in Under Siege.
He says it a lot. It's Garcia fucking Hotspur and his gun Johnson, which transforms into a lot of, so there's a lot of dick jokes. But what I will say is that the writing is fantastic. Like, at first I was like, really, you know, like kind of what Bulletstorm is, but the writing that is done, which you have to credit 8-4, the guys in Japan, they did a hell of a job with the script. If there's one thing that is keeping me, I mean, I've been frustrated with this game and put the controller down and come back to it a couple times. What's keeping me coming back is I want to know where the story goes, and I want to know, I want to experience more of the writing, because it's fucking hysterical. No pun intended, but it's honestly hilarious. my issues with the game are kind of with the controls. Surprise, it's a Japanese shooter, but I don't feel that the aiming is all that accurate, and I don't feel like it can really get a solid bead on enemies. And when you have giant bosses that have the not stereotypical, but like the usual shoot the red spot on the boss to kill it, you need to be able to get a bead on something. And sometimes I've found, especially using the pistol or even the sort of shotgun, like I just have a hard time sometimes hitting the enemies. But that being said, it's a pretty solid third-person shooter. I think it's a fun game that came out this summer that, you know, if you're interested in that sort of game or you want a different kind of shooter, I would definitely take a look at it. It's good stuff. No, the music's fantastic. Yamaoka of, you know, Silent Hill did the music, and it kicks ass. Like, the audio's great. So even if you don't like scary games, I wouldn't say that this game is really scary. I would equate it to something like Eternal Darkness, where it's more creepy, but it's good.
Very nice. All right, James, you're up next.
So I have been trying to figure out which of the games on the Live Arcade I will next partake in, and while nothing has quite filled the void in my heart left by Half Minute Hero, I've tried a few, and I'll pick one and talk about it in more detail next week. The first one I went through was Trenched, which is a World War I-esque mech-based game. It feels like a little bit of tower defense stuff, where about the placement of turrets and then the sort of combating of waves of enemies that come at you. I think that's the Double Fine game.
Yeah.
So it's got this kind of weird sense of humor about it that's apparent very early in the game. I kind of enjoyed what I've played so far, but again, it's just the demo, so I'm not exactly sure how it all stacks out in the end. Although I understand there's a fairly robust multiplayer options if you can find people to play with. The second game I played, and this is probably the front runner, was Bastion, which is one of the Summer of Arcade games.
It's burning a hole on my hard drive.
Literally?
No.
You might want to get that looked at. This is a, how would you best describe it? Isometric action RPG. Basically, you play as a character who is running across an ever-expanding landscape that's literally being built in front of him as he progresses, killing enemies with various types of weapons. All the while, the game is narrated by a narrator who describes the things you're doing, including just standing around doing nothing. It's kind of amazing.
Do you think it's Zelda-ish?
I don't really see it, to be honest, because there's not a lot in the way of puzzle solving, at least from what I've seen. There's a lot of in the way of killing. I do a lot of that. And there's a lot of weapon. I mean, even in the demo, there's three or four different types of weapons you can play with. So I've sort of settled in on what I enjoy using, which might stick with me throughout the game. And then lastly, and this is the one that I'm most... I went back and played this demo three times now, and I still don't know how I feel about it. It's From Dust, which is the most recent Summer of Arcade game, I think?
No, as of today, there's Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet, which I'm really excited to try.
My first thought playing this game was, wait, how is this game not called Populous? Because basically you are a... You're not a god, I guess. You're a... What's the term? They use like a spirit or whatever the term they use for it. And you basically deform the land and then reform it to solve puzzles so your followers can get to various objectives. That's pretty much the game from what I've seen so far. You know, you can move water, lava, and earth. build bridges and remove lakes and various things so they can get to these totems they use to reactivate. I kind of enjoyed what I've played because there's a little bit of puzzle involved, but I found that it was difficult with the Xbox controller to get things right where I wanted them.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
I mean, even through the third play, there's a stage where you have to build a bridge in running water, and it gets eroded. So I'm trying to build it in time with them crossing the bridge, and I always end up missing, and then they just stand there mad at me that I didn't build a bridge in time, and then it erodes, and they get washed away.
I know exactly where you are. I bought that game.
Oh.
It's Doshin the Giant, man. It's
That's
awesome.
What I was thinking.
But there's no Doshin. You're just there.
That's true, but the first time when I saw it at E3, I was like, haha, it's Doshin. Cool. I'm getting this.
James, the way you laid out those three games describing what they were very succinctly, it sort of made me think you were setting it up for like a public vote of which one you should buy. But then I realized you professed distaste for democracy. So.
I am willing to take input in the talkback thread on which one would be the best candidate.
Billy, what's your recommendation? I bet you have an opinion on that.
I think it's tough. You know, I mean, you have three completely different games, and then on top of it, what also just came out, which is Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet, all of them are awesome. I've played the demos for almost all of them, but I did pick up From Dust, and I think I'm going to get the rest of them. That's what, you know, I guess I'm not trying to bash the 3DS, but, you know, Summer of Arcade, Microsoft has been doing this for a long time. It's usually when a lot of their super high-profile XBLA games are all bunched together. This is what should be in the eShop. Like, this kind of caliber games where $15 gets you, you know, 6 to 8 hours, maybe 6 to 10 hours.
I think what's telling about Summer of Arcade, and this is definitely the best year of it so far, because I went back and reviewed the other years, and, like, last year the Tomb Raider game was in there, the Lara Croft game, excuse me, and that was, like, the big headline game of that year. What is kind of amazing, though, is two of the games I listed is that I've played on arcade recently. Trenched and Half Minute Hero actually aren't in the Summer of Arcade. They were the 2 weeks before.
Yeah. So it's been an astoundingly strong run.
It's like these weren't even games they considered to be their top five for the summer.
Yeah.
It's bafflingly high quality games coming out on that service.
Well, I think next week is Fruit Ninja Connect, so the streak is probably ending.
Sweet. Day one. I totally need to play that.
All right, James. So we'll look forward to hearing about one of those games in more depth next week. And finally, Greg.
Well, first of all, I wanted to follow up on what we talked about with 3DS last week by saying there's a new ad campaign that's been airing on British television that speaks to some of the points that we were making already. So this is an advert that opens up, I think, with something along the lines of the first phrase is, "This is the next generation of portable gaming."
Okay.
And ends with the phrase, "This is not Nintendo DS, this is Nintendo 3DS.
Are they listening?
So, somebody got the memo and then crafted a thrillingly unsubtle advert.
Did it look like it was put together in the last couple days?
And in between these references, they show off almost all third party games with the names that people would recognise: Ridge Racer, Resident Evil, Metal Gear, even though that's not coming out till next year, I think now. So they're playing a very different angle, and in fact, the 3D aspect is not explicitly mentioned, other than the fact, obviously, it's in the name, but they don't refer to the fact that it has stereoscopic graphics or anything. It just obviously it has the little disclaimer saying 2D image of a 3D display.
I love that disclaimer.
But it has to have that, of course, but seems like, you know, already we talked about that this price cut has to be kind of the first move in a remarketing of the platform, and it seems that Nintendo, in Britain at least, is responding with a change in tack, and perhaps they're going to leave the sort of 3D aspect more to the word of mouth, and then they'll tout the rest of the features of the system through conventional advertising.
That's a positive shift in marketing, but I want to push back a little bit on what you said, that obviously they have to have the disclaimer of 2D image of a 3D display. Is that really necessary? I mean, do they think people are going to be kind of circling around their TVs trying to figure out the angle? I mean, don't people know that they're not looking at a 3D image? Seriously.
When I said obviously they have to have it, that was my way of saying they've had it on absolutely everything they've ever used.
I think it's really over.
They used to emblazon it on our media assets, like blocking part of the action with this big red fucking banner that said 2D image of a 3D game.
It's stupid. It's like, what do you expect? I mean, they're coming to the same website that people have always come to. You don't expect it to suddenly pop out of your screen in 3D.
So, I do. I do, actually.
Do you need to put that all over your marketing? I just don't understand that.
I know what you mean, but clearly they have a rule.
Well, yeah. They have a rule that when you take photos of or video of people playing 3DS, it has to have the people's hands in the image. And
that was Wii, not 3DS.
When you play Wii U, you have to make sure the controller is in the same frame as the TV screen. And when you show Wii commercials, you have to make sure that you can actually see people playing it and that there's a couch.
When you shoot Wii video at events, you have to be visible in the shot.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. They have their rules for whatever wisdom goes behind them.
But remember, this is the same company that released a style guide that excoriated the use of the Wii and Nintendo Wii.
Yeah, it's just Wii.
They've actually they've walked back a little bit on Nintendo Wii. Not so much in like press conferences, because those are very, you know, those scripts are scrubbed pretty hard before they go up there, before Reggie starts talking. So they stay pretty true to the style guide for press conferences. But like in interviews and stuff, I've seen Nintendo Wii. I've seen them.
I think sometimes it just slips out. Even yeah. Them.
Struggle to like, this is a dumb rule.
Struggle to live up to their own standards. But, speaking of just Wii, that is what I'm going to look at this week.
Is that your next game, Just Wii?
Well, last week we talked about Wii 3. My time playing the played the demos at the Nintendo event. We concentrated on 3DS because, of course, that was the whole topic with the price change and everything. But I did get to play some Wii games there. For instance, obviously, we talked about Kirby. That's enough. There was also Rhythm Heaven, which I did not play. I decided to pass that opportunity because I will be importing it shortly. So I'll enjoy that on the Japanese Wii, maybe a few weeks or a month or something, but sometime in the relatively near future.
Whenever the Her Majesty's Postal Service decides to...
I think as long as I get it before the winter, it seems like once we get towards the winter, there's a significant downgrade in the efficacy of the delivery. But there was also Xenoblade, of course. They couldn't show at E3 in America. I didn't get to play it. It didn't seem like the best setting for it either. You know, sort of extensive kind of game like that. It seemed like a lot to get used to. But I got to watch while waiting for another demo, some people being taken through it. And visually, it looks very nice. You probably, if you've seen media of the game by now, you're familiar with the sort of lush grassland kind of areas of the game. That's kind of what I was seeing. So those look very pretty. And the draw distance in particular, at least, you know, from what you can tell, it probably might be doing some little tricks or whatever, but it seems like there's this big expanse in front of you. And of course, it has this very cool setting of being, the world is actually on the body of this sort of titan. Well, there's two titans, so, you know, you'll be on one or the other. That is the world you're in. So it's a nice way of sort of having a world that's artificial in a way that's useful for a video game in terms of traversing it or being varied, but at the same time also being kind of believable in the context of the story. That's this central premise that there's these two godlike figures that sort of fought each other and died, and their remnants is what gives birth to these two different worlds. So it looks very interesting. I'll certainly be monitoring the reviews on that for whether I might try it myself. It's not the natural sort of game that I would enjoy, but certainly some elements with the battle system, you know, the fact that it's not turn-based or anything like that, you know, and there's no kind of warping in and out of a battle scene or anything. It's all just kind of happening around you. Sounds a bit more up my alley. So I'm willing to consider it. But finally, of course, the thing that I was really eager to play on Wii was Skyward Sword, because they didn't actually have the E3 demo of it at the, you know, analogous event the year before. So I had not played the game at all until now. And the first thing I did was the boss battle. So the boss battle was definitely sort of put me straight away in mind of what Johnny said about talking to TYP about how you kind of have to, you know, you really have to swing at it and you have to sort of relearn, you know, how to have a Zelda boss battle kind of thing. Because, right. I mean, I think the main thing that got me was how much more sort of active you have to be about blocking. You know, typically in a Zelda game, blocking, you know, you're either just holding down one button or it even does it for you in some cases. Whereas in this case, you had to sort of gesture with the nunchuck to sort of put the shield out in front of you and block, like when he sort of threw some projectiles at you, for instance. So that was different straight away, you know, having to think about blocking in a more active sense. And then, of course, there was actually the swinging of the sword, the different strokes being necessary, like depending on how the boss was guarding and all that kind of stuff. And it took me quite a while, but I did eventually beat it. And that was very encouraging, I think, for the possibilities of the combat in the finished game, for a different kind of boss encounter that isn't just, you know, sort of figuring out a sequence that will do damage to the boss and then doing it another twice. That definitely is what I want to see out of the game. And I couldn't help but think of Monster Hunter, actually, where the way that now you can drink potions while running. So I was sort of frantically running away from the boss while chugging a red potion.
Yes.
Just not quite the high step of Monster Hunter, but still definitely seemed like they'd been thinking about that. And I played the dungeon bit as well. I actually played it multiple times because, you know, the first couple of times you're figuring out what to do, but
right.
It's timed. So then you get so far and it just stops. But because I had the opportunity to, I played it again so I could actually get further and see quite a lot more of it. And again, the puzzle solving seemed to be, you know, exactly as you'd want it. Obviously using Motion Plus, like for that sort of beetle item, yep. You know, where you're navigating that around these different areas. Then there was one where you've probably seen it in a trailer if you've been paying attention, where you can actually make these three sort of eyes dizzy by making them track the sword and sort of waving it around in a circle. And then when they get dizzy, they blow up and unlock the door. Yeah, these sorts of things seem very promising to me. So I have to say, those elements of the game, you know, dungeons, boss battles, all that kind of thing, are the ones that I would have had the most confidence in already.
Mm-hmm.
So it was nice to have them reassured. I'm definitely very confident in them now. And I'm also, you know, very happy with where the visuals have sort of come to. I like the style. I think that's going to work nicely. But the real outstanding question, as we discussed before, is the connective tissue of the game. You know, the overworld and, you know, what you do between dungeons and all this sort of stuff. So it couldn't really do very much to, you know, assuage my concerns in that area. But for me, the kind of priorities I have in a Zelda game, I mean, for instance, Spirit Tracks, that has, I think, tremendous dungeons.
Yeah, I would agree.
For that reason, I thoroughly enjoyed it. But there was the caveat that the connective tissue was awful. You know, it was just the train, all that. I mean, I felt like it added very little value to the game at all. And for some people, that's a deal breaker.
Yeah.
You know, even if they're not enjoying the dungeons as much as I am, but yeah, they would still be enjoying them, but that stuff just in the middle just bogs it down. They don't want in. So it's very critical that they get this stuff right. And, you know, they've made some appealing kind of noises on it. You know, but whether they actually follow through with that is a completely other thing. I mean, the director of the game goes back to the flagship Capcom games and he kind of came over to Nintendo when flagship ceased to exist. And so I'm hoping that, you know, his involvement with something like Minish Cap, which is a terrific overworld, admittedly in a 2D game, will help inform some of their decisions on this connective stuff.
Yeah, that's exciting. I hadn't heard that, so
I think we've discussed it on this show, Johnny.
That guy?
Yeah, I think I mentioned that at one point, because he was involved in the DS games.
Well, I think just Phantom Hourglass, actually. He's not, I don't think he was on Spirit Tracks. I think he went, because Spirit Tracks and Skyward Sword were developed essentially at the same time. But of course, Spirit Tracks development wrapped up a lot more quickly.
It was a much easier job. I wonder if he was like the fourth executive producer on that game, on Spirit Tracks.
Billy, I haven't really heard your thoughts on Skyward Sword from the new demo.
That was one game that I decided this year to avoid because it's so damn close. I don't want any spoilers. Usually, you know, you see one of the dungeons in the game at E3, so I decided not to play it. I played it last year, and the Motion Plus stuff wasn't up to up to par for me. So that was actually my concern for you, Greg, was how'd that hold up for you? Because I watched some people playing it, and like it seemed a little silly that Link is running around with his arm extended and his sword.
That still is there.
Yeah, I think visually it might, you know, sometimes because it is actually more closely mimicking the way that you're doing it, you know, you might look a bit silly on the screen because you're not a hero with a great sense of cinematic sort of flair about how you position your body. But if you're especially like this boss battle I was in, I'm not thinking about how he looks when I'm in the middle of the fight. I mean, it seemed to work pretty well for me, but I will think that it's probably going to require some significant, you know, recalibration every now and then. You're just going to be doing what you do in Wii Sports Resort to some extent, where you just sort of point at the screen and press down on the D-pad, I think.
Yeah.
I wonder if they'll build that into the game and try to make that organic. Like, to go through a door, you have to point at it and push it down, and it really recalibrates it, but they make it look in the game like you're pushing a switch or something.
I don't know. The woman showing it off to me when I saw it at E3, like, literally extended my arm out and had me press down, like, physically. I was like, oh, boy.
Well, it's one of the things that could come in late in development, is something like a way of weaving in something relatively subtly. That would be the best case scenario, definitely, but I don't know how feasible that is, given the different kinds of gameplay. If you're just exploring an overworld part, or if you're in the middle of a dungeon, or in the middle of a fight, or, you know, these are the sorts of variables that'd be difficult to account for.
I'm excited for it. You know, I'm curious if it's going to be the case where the motion plus is so intrinsic in nature with the game that I'm going to have to stand up while playing this game.
I mean, what they seem to have indicated is that there's going to be big stretches of the game where you're not necessarily going to be involved in moment-to-moment combat and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, with the sword fight with the boss that I had, you know, I could see you wanted to stand up for that one. Whereas, like, dealing with the more standard enemies, they still had, like, a motion plus element to them, if you will. So, like, a Stealthos Knight will guard in a certain direction, you know, horizontal or vertical, so you want to slash accordingly. Or there is a spider that you could flip up and then it would expose its weak underbelly. But those were sort of so general that I don't think you would necessarily need to be standing up to do a motion that was good enough to achieve the desired result. So I think it would be relatively limited in which point you would feel like, yeah, I want to stand up for this.
Okay.
The only thing that I really observed was exactly what we were discussing earlier, which is a lot of the time I was holding my remote deliberately down because I was just too taken aback by how dumb him running with his outstretched arm was.
Well, I was doing a lot pointing my arm up to do the charge up move, you know, because if you point it to the sky for a certain length of time, then the blade of the sword flashes and then you can deal more damage that way, which is a cool little sort of wrinkle in it, you know, because it kind of makes you defend for a while, so you need to be careful about timing and all that kind of thing. But I mean, in that case, it wasn't so much him I was worried about looking silly as it was me.
Yeah, well, that's
so
true.
I look forward to doing that in the privacy of my own home.
That's also true. Well, I know you didn't get to talk about Xenoblade, or didn't play it rather. Andrew actually got to play it for an Australian event, presumably the same demo. We have some impressions on the site for that. So. Yeah. I know I'm preempting.
James is so eager to get into Now Playing, he just can't hold it.
I know I'm preempting the Now Playing, but I just wanted to point out because it actually makes sense here.
Yeah, I mean, that's the, I didn't get to, you know, there weren't like any cutscenes on display when I saw it, so didn't get to gauge the script or the voice acting or anything. The one thing I can say is that a bunch of English accented people screaming babble at each other during a battle in a very Japanese way is unnerving.
That, it sounds like a monolith game then. I mean, that's pretty much their standard operating procedure.
Well, why don't we wrap up new business and we'll take a break, come back with Now Playing, where we have not only Xenoblade English impressions, but a lot more stuff. And then we'll come back with your listener mail right after this. Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com. All right, first up this week, we've got a first ever look at the English translation of Xenoblade Chronicles, just announced for Australia. Andrew Brown has very detailed impressions of the new voice acting, the English script/subtitles, and the gameplay itself. We've also got contributor Paul Morgan's hands-on impressions of Super Mario 3D Land and Mario Kart 7, the demos from E3. So with all the 3DS news lately, it's a good time to check in on Nintendo's flag-bearing holiday releases.
We've got recent hire James Dawson, who revives our preview section with coverage of Alien Infestation, the Metroidvania game from Way Forward, set in the Aliens universe. We talked about it last week, and Johnny had totally forgotten the game even existed. We have a review of Cars 2 for both the Wii and DS, where Pedro is reviewing the Wii, and weirdly, we sent the DS copy all the way to Japan for James Charlton to review it.
Yeah. Alarmingly poor cost control.
Costco what?
In dueling editions of Extra Life, Zach remembers Super Mario Bros. Deluxe for Game Boy Color, while Pedro extols the virtues of Aladdin for Super Nintendo, yes, the one with no sword.
The good one.
Also, be sure to check out Danny's weekly roundup of Japanese eShop releases. It's either a thrilling preview of what may come soon to your own region, or a depressing graveyard of broken import dreams. And finally, we have a feel-good editorial from James Charlton called Why I'm Excited for the Wii U. It's about why he's excited for the Wii U.
Yes, we have all this great original content, plus the latest news, screenshots, videos, etc. You can find it all, plus our award-winning, forums over at NintendoWorldReport.com. Okay, we're back for listener mail, and the address, as always, is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And let's see, the first letter here is from RW. I picked this one out for me because I like saying RW. RW writes, with Nintendo's recent financial shockwaves, it's obvious the 3DS, which ironically was originally rushed to launch to appease their shareholders, has put a tremendous burden on the company. Be it because of smartphone competition, lack of software, third-party support, a hefty price, or perhaps the market's ambivalence to 3D, I think it's safe to assume Iwata is probably saying to himself, we'll never do that again. And if that's the case, what sort of things can we expect differently from Wii U? A more prepared launch? More original software? In other words, less cash imports? More cost-efficient hardware? Or do you think they'll see the benefit in making Wii U a cut above the current generation so that it too doesn't see the dramatic drop-off in sales as the Wii did halfway through its life cycle?
In a perfect world, in a world that is without stupidity and Nintendo not always just marching to their own drum, yeah, I would love to see a more prepared launch, you know, have a Mario game at launch, which I'm assuming we'll just see Super Mario Brothers Mii.
Yeah.
At launch. More original software? Yeah, Pikmin. Let's see that shit there.
oh, that's not happening.
Supposedly they've been working on it in various states for a long time. I don't know.
More cost-efficient hardware? You know, I don't want cost-efficient hardware. I want
with the opposite.
I want them to make this kick off the next generation. They are going to have a year lead, most likely. I would say, 2012 is Nintendo's year. 2013 is when Sony and Microsoft come back. I think they need to make this thing a tank. Don't just be a little bit better and have 1 year. There's a reason why people went, holy shit, did you see the Zelda HD trailer at E3? Like, that was amazing. But yeah, I do see a benefit of making the Wii U a cut above current generation. Yeah, I want that leap in more than just the touchscreen. And I hope this is a wake-up call for Iwata. I really do. I hope they go, you know what? Maybe we do need to have multi-touch, because then people can not only can port iPad games over to this controller, but, you know, multi-touch is something that people are used to now, and they are kind of digging it. And
it provides a larger design space for Nintendo.
Sure. I mean, people are using multi-touch on Vita stuff, and it works. I think it's viable. It's well worth being able to use. I do hope it is a slap in the face. And, you know, I think Iwata's kind of under the gun now, and they have to go back to the drawing board. They have to... Fortunately, they didn't give any specs at E3, so nobody knows what's really under the hood.
And which is subject to change, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's still fluid. But, I mean, I think one case where, you know, the 3DS situation might have given Nintendo pause for thought about the sort of habits it's fallen into recently is, of course, typically, which has changed now with the cut, but typically Nintendo will sell things for a profit in terms of hardware, which is unlike other companies in this sort of market.
Right.
And so I think, you know, for them, there might have been a tendency to say, well, look, you know, if it's our hardware, the powerful branding that we've got as a company, and then, you know, DS specifically or Wii specifically, with that kind of branding and all that, it'll sell anyway. You know, maybe we don't need the absolute strongest lineup of games. We can just depend on the hardware to sell itself to some extent. And the point is that makes money for us in itself. You know, a company that needs to make money off the games wouldn't think that way. But look, that's the thing with Nintendo. They perhaps, you know, when we talked about moving the launch of the 3DS into the fiscal year, you know, it was like, look, we are going to sell 4 million units of hardware. And that in itself is money in the bank, leaving the games out of it altogether. But what they found is, in fact, that they, you know, they missed that target a little bit, and then the platforms ended up floundering, and they've had to completely cut away all that precious margin until it's not there anymore, and they're selling it at a loss. So they may have to think a bit differently about how they're going to launch Wii U in terms of the software to go with it. And this may mean, we know, you know, it's going to be after the end of this fiscal year. We know it's going to be sometime in, you know, quarter two or later of 2012. And it may influence them to go later than sooner for a number of reasons.
Yeah.
First of all, getting the games ready, a killer lineup, you know, because people are going to be asking questions naturally after this. And so they need to have the correct answer quickly to that sort of thing. And secondly, they do now need to focus their efforts on 3DS in a way they weren't expecting. They are now sort of in the middle of this exercise of propping it up that they didn't think they were going to have to do a year ago or even 6 months ago. And so I don't know how quickly they want to be moving on to another major hardware launch where they still need to make sure that the 3DS, which they've poured so much into, is viable.
Yeah, I think I'm thinking along the same lines as Greg, in that I think if anything, what's happened with the 3DS, I think its primary effect on Wii U is that it means Wii U is a holiday release in 2012 and not, you know, I thought the chance of it launching in the spring or the summer was small, but extant. And I think that is obliterated now because Nintendo's seen the struggles. I mean, you know, among all the other problems that 3DS had, I just don't think April and May is really a great time to launch a new system, especially a really premier system. It's one thing to launch DSi in April when it's, you know, clearly an iterative product and, you know, you also understand how to market DSi a lot better than they did 3DS. And DSi was quite affordable when they launched it. And I think with a very premium product like 3DS, the only reasonable time to launch that was in the fall, in the holiday season. And they just decided that they couldn't afford to wait that long. And I think what they've seen now is they really couldn't afford to do it early.
Well, take it the other way. Some of Iwata's comments and the changes to earnings forecasts that they made in the past indicate that their original plan was to hit the holiday last year.
Right.
Yes, and that's true.
But they fell so far short of that software-wise that was simply not practical.
This was the better scenario.
And then it's like, well, but don't worry, investors, we're still going to put it in this fiscal year, which is then how we got to this point. So I think perhaps in making the argument to the investors, you know, we are doing it this way, why are we doing it this way? They have a more powerful argument to make now. It's like, well, you know, do you want us to have to cut the price again and screw everyone over? You know, because, you know, it would be easier argument to make. So look, we're going to wait until the end of the year, until we've got all our ducks in a row and we can come out very strong. And I mean, it may mean some awkwardness. Like we kind of touched on this before, like with some of these ports, you know, some like Arkham Asylum or, you know, coming out a whole year after it came, Arkham City, coming out a whole year after it came out on PS3 and 360 and all that kind of stuff. But, I think that is going to be a price worth paying for a robust first party lineup, which really is going to sell it.
Well, I'm also hoping that one thing that people are forgetting is that now with home consoles, services are a very, very important thing. And I'm not just talking about Netflix. I mean, not having a robust online setup and everything else, like, obviously at E3, the online thing is a big question mark, and it's going to be up to the third parties, which is going to make it awful again. So
yeah, that was concerning, wasn't it? The way the rhetoric was not reassuring at all. I suppose the most positive thing you could say perhaps is that, oh well, maybe it's just going to be similar to services that exist on Xbox or something, but with fewer mandates. But if it's not that, if it's actually like not a unified system at all, that's scary.
Mm. Yeah, if really I don't need PS2 online anymore. I need a real setup.
You need at least PSN.
Yeah, at least PSN. And that's not saying much, you know. There were a lot of promises with the 3DS initially, like 3D movies and a browser and a shop and demos and all this stuff. And we have some of it now.
We're still only partway there, yeah. I mean, the fact that they didn't have the shop ready for launch was an embarrassment, of course. Yeah. And again,
well, it was an embarrassment that they totally self-inflicted, though.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, it just seems bizarre to me that that would not be on schedule, especially when they had plans to launch the system even earlier. It's mind-blowing in a way. But that again, would be another benefit of Wii U being, you know, not rushed to the market, because you could avoid situations like that happening again. But I suppose the only counter argument you can make is that if they see Wii U as a way of propping earnings back up, maybe it's needed sooner now because they've taken such a big hit on the 3DS. Now, I would hope that sort of short-termism has, you know, already been effectively rejected.
Cooler heads should prevail.
Yeah, but that's one factor maybe going in the other direction. But I think it's pretty well dominated by the other ones.
You know, companies make a lot of bad decisions at the behest of investors all the time, and many times to the long-term detriment of the company. You know, it's hard to say that Nintendo is going to be able to be different. But, I mean, if you read the investor Q&A from, I guess it was about 2 months ago now, there were some of the dumbest questions I've ever seen asked of Nintendo at any event ever.
I know what you mean. There was the chap that was like, basically, I think video games are stupid, but
yes,
but I own stock in your company.
Yes, basically, you know. So that is a bad preface to a question to Satoru Iwata. But I mean, the one thing that I would say about where they are now with the investors is that they do have, unlike a lot of companies in this arena, and John has talked about this, like when we've had emails go back and forth, Nintendo are sitting on bales of cash and liquid assets that virtually no other company has. They're debt-free, essentially. You know, they don't have anything where, don't forget, I mean, they lost all this money in the last quarter. They've lost money in quarters like a handful of times in their history, and they've been around for ages. So, yeah, they have built up, especially during the good times of Wii and DS, huge sums of money. And so the point is that they could say to their investors, look, we can make these sorts of interventions like we've done with the 3DS, and we're not going to go insolvent.
Yeah.
We can afford to do this. It makes long-term sense to do this. So at least they can make that sort of argument to the investors credibly.
Yeah, I think, I'm trying to remember what the exact number was, but they could operate multiple years on just their cash without going into debt and not making a single dollar, which is absurd.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing about Nintendo is they don't invest heavily in much of anything. They're very stingy about how they spend their money.
They just bought a baseball team.
Howard Lincoln's got that. Maybe that's a pet project. But what I'm saying is they don't get into like a lot of crazy acquisitions like a company like EA or even Ubisoft does. They're not constantly adding teams all over the world. There's no Nintendo Shanghai. They've actually, over the past decade, they've generally trend of divesting themselves from acquisitions, actually. So, and now they tend to have just third parties that they partner with, but they don't actually own parts of the company. So Nintendo really doesn't, they don't get into, they don't pour a lot of money into projects that could fail.
And the point is, for those, if you put your money in that kind of thing, that's what we call an illiquid asset. You can't just pull your money out of that
right
at the drop of the hat, whereas they have literally a lot of cash, and then they have a lot of money in assets that is easily transferable if they needed it. So that makes it a lot easier of a sell to the investors. Sure, the investors aren't happy about it, but they could sell it, and they just need to be proven right by what happens next.
Right. The node,
and then whatever they want to do with the Wii U should should be fine.
Yeah, the no debt situation is actually really important.
Yeah, of course. They're not paying interest.
For a company, that's kind of an amazing situation.
They're just not shackled in the same way that many companies are.
They don't have to deal with creditors, essentially, which is kind of a godsend for a company.
Okay, great question, RW. Billy, can you please read the next email?
Sure. Minoru in Tokyo writes, "Hello, Johnny, James, John, and Greg. And Billy. This is my first writing for my English study. I started listening to various video game podcasts last year, and I eventually fell in love with RFN because it's so enlightening that no other game media, not to speak of Japanese ones, rival in this respect. Then I started listening to the backlog from the episode where Johnny became the host back in 2008. Now Johnny's the person whose English I listened to most of my life.
Wow.
Anyway, thanks to you guys, not only my listening skills improved, but I also was turned on to and played many great games such as Ghost Trick, Radiant Historia, and Retro Game Challenge, whose sequel is my newest business. But it's really a shame that such a great game was not brought out outside of Japan. I'm wondering if there's been OPSA cases. So here's my question. Do you happen to know of any really flicking awesome games on Nintendo platforms never released in Japan? If they're for non-region lock platforms, I would consider importing them. Thank you for bearing my non-native English. I hope you keep up the great work."
Thank you, Minor, very much for your letter. When we got this last week, it kind of, I read this in the morning, and it sort of gave me like a surreal feeling for the next few hours, because the idea that someone could learn English from listening to these crazy podcasts, and that I would have spoken the most English that someone has ever heard, someone who I don't know who lives in another country, is...
Well, you're probably getting up there for me with the editing, you know, I have to listen to it several
That's
times.
True.
And you likewise for me, Greg.
Well, you know, I'm just tickled by the thought of a Japanese man saying December. I'd love to hear that. Well, I mean, there's a few cases of this where you get some notable kind of games from the Western markets that don't cross over to Japan. One that Johnny's talked about before, I never got to play it, was Secret of Evermore.
Ah, yeah.
Because that was sort of, in some quarters, it was kind of reviled for what it wasn't. As in, it wasn't, say, Condemned Tetsu 3, which was the actual sequel to Secret of Mana.
Right.
Which the Western markets did not get. But, you know, Johnny, you seem to like it when you've talked about it, so why would this be nice?
Yeah, Secret of Evermore is actually quite a good game. And it is, I think, if you like Secret of Mana, you'll probably like this quite a bit, because it's definitely based on the same formula, even though it's a different universe, it's different characters and everything. But it's very much the same kind of game, and it's actually really, really well done. So this is the only game made by Square Hawaii, Square USA, which was located in Hawaii. They later made Final Fantasy: The Spirits Within.
Yes,
and
they
did. That was the end of Square USA. But
well-earned end.
Yes, prior to that, they also made some of the FMV for Final Fantasy VII and some of the other PS1 games before they moved into the movie-making business very briefly. But the only video game that they actually made in-house was Secret of Evermore, and it's actually really good. It's a late Super NES game, so it has really nice visuals, really nice music. A little bit of a corny story, but it's sort of based on this character who's obsessed with B-movies, and so they sort of build up the atmosphere of the game world around that a little bit. It's not Last Action Hero or anything like that, but...
Thank God!
Yeah, but the writing has a little bit of that flair to it. And the interesting thing about it is that whereas in Secret of Mana you had these other... essentially playable characters who are controlled by the computer and who tagged around with you. In this game, you have your dog. And so it's always just you controlling the one main character, and you also have your dog. And the dog is, I'd say, generally more helpful than the AI characters in Secret of Mana, and is better programmed, and because the dog can do other things than you, then there are opportunities to actually, I think you press select and you take over control of the dog, and you can go around and actually sniff for things in the ground, and you can fit through certain places. You can do a few things as the dog that the main character can't do. And I think it does have sort of limited two-player support for that, but it's not really something I ever used. But Secret of Evermore is actually, I think, pretty good and really underrated, or maybe it's underplayed, because of what Greg talked about, because it's not the game that people, that the hardcore fans wanted Square to bring over to America, and instead we got this. But if you're putting it in the same camp as like Final Fantasy Mystic Quest, you're really doing it a disservice. It is, it's quite a bit better than that.
Yeah, and in terms of the sort of importability of it, obviously you would need to have, you know, a working Super Famicom to start with. So that might be a problem. But if you do have one, then the converters for an American game on a Japanese console are really quite basic. All they do is just change the slot so it fits. Mm-hmm. So there's no like problem from that point of view. You'd probably be able to find one on eBay or something somewhere. I don't think that would be too difficult. So it's not that importable, but it's not completely out of the realms of possibility either.
If you had like if you had a Super Famicom clone, it might already have support for that, or if you're interested in getting something like a Retro Duo, those are generally sort of set up to play multiple regions of games without any adapters at all.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like Square, you know, has any interest in re-releasing it in its original markets, you know, in the PAL territories in America.
Sure as hell not going to release it in Japan.
Yeah, they're not going to put it as an import title on the Japanese Virtual Console
it's
either.
In English, read this.
But if they did, I hope they would call it Seiken Densetsu USA. Because it would drive people crazy. I would love it if they did that.
That's pretty much the precedent. Like, you know, Super Mario Brothers USA, the Mystic Quest, that was USA as well.
Yes.
So another this is a much more current, but I would highly recommend ExciteBots. And Excite Truck actually sold fairly well in Japan, so I was really surprised that they never brought this to Japan, but then they never brought it to Europe either. So
yeah, but I think
same thing, right?
I think we've observed at this point that it was probably Japan's fault.
Yeah. It was dictated down to them.
If Japan had said yes, I think we would have got it too. So it's all their fault.
Yeah, well, ExciteBots, if you like racing games, if you like crazy arcade racing games, if you like Excite Truck at all, then ExciteBots is absolutely worth importing, and it's really good. And you certainly won't have any trouble with the language. Not, I think, Minora, your letter proves that you're pretty good at English anyway, better than some American people who write in, so...
You might miss some of the subtleties of the story, though.
As long as he's not too confused by the combination of the word super and sandwich, then I think...
I'm pretty confused by that combination, too,
if you're no more confused by the combination of those words, then ExciteBot should be fine.
Minoru writes good.
Yes, nice, thank you. I also would point out, I'm pretty sure this wasn't released in Japan, but Beyond Good and Evil.
Oh, yeah.
Has some elements of Zelda games in them. Obviously, it came out for the GameCube, PS2, Xbox, PC, toasters.
XBLA.
XBLA.
I wonder if they would actually release it on PSN or something in Japan.
It's a lot of translating.
Yeah, there's no existing Japanese translation for it, so that would be kind of expensive to do. But I think the game would, if they marketed it, it would sell well. I think it has plenty of Japanese appeal. It's not a particularly Western game by design.
If Beyond Good and Evil 2 ever actually does happen...
Please, God.
I could see it getting a release in Japan.
Billy, you would be the expert on this series, so I'll just tee it up for you, but if you've ever been curious about Madden, I don't think those games are released in Japan typically.
I think they are, actually, yeah.
There's been some, yeah, although I understand that at least one case, or maybe, you know, it was one case that was subsequently repeated, but they did so without any localization whatsoever. So it was basically like importing it. So.
Well, they do show NFL games in Japan. So I don't remember, because I remember catching a game after I landed for Tokyo Game Show, and it was Monday Night Football. And I think
in the middle of Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean it basically was, but they either had had people doing voiceover of like a translation of what was going on play by play, or they just let the regular audio go. I can't remember, but right. I think primarily what this happens with third party games, but you know where they're like, yeah, this really won't fit. But you'd be surprised at some of the games like that would be released over there, like Medal of Honor Rising Sun.
First off, that game's not good to begin with.
Right.
Secondly, that's kind of awkward.
What the content consisted of. I remember that game was released there, and I remember being at TGS where they were showing it, and I was like, man, that is kind of fucked up, but whatever. I mean, there's certain reasons why publishers are like, yeah, we'll do this, or, you know, a lot of third-party games will switch publishers where, like, Sega will publish an Atari-made game, or it's something bizarre. But
Square Enix is all over the EA games.
You've been seeing that with Nintendo recently. Some of the more high-profile Western third-party Wii games, like GoldenEye and Epic Mickey, they're stepping in and providing them for the Japan audience.
Well, you know, it makes sense. But, you know, usually you won't see first-party games. Like, I'm kind of surprised Excitebots was not released in Japan.
Although I would venture, in fact, that this may happen more as time goes on, as if Nintendo actually takes a more serious approach to developing games in Western markets by Western developers for Western markets principally. It's conceivable that some of those games will look at them and say, we don't want to bring those over to Japan. So it could happen more in the future. But there is another exception. Advance Wars Days of Ruin did not go to Japan. In a very curious development, this was a game that was developed in Japan by Intelligent Systems, written in Japanese, that was then localized for the Western markets, but never actually released in Japan.
That's very odd.
The working theory would be basically because it's an Advance Wars game that changed the tone. It went to the post-apocalyptic setting. It was less whimsical. And therefore, at some point, they must have said, you know what, would this appeal to the Japanese market anymore?
I've got another example for you, actually two. These are not on Nintendo systems, but they have quite a heritage with games that were on Nintendo systems, and that would be Dead Space 1 and 2. According to Wikipedia, neither of these games is out in Japan, and if you're a fan of Resident Evil 4, then I think, and Metroid Prime to some extent, although they're more leveraged on Resident Evil 4, but there's definitely some Metroid Prime in these games as well, and Metroid in general, just in terms of atmosphere. These games, I think, are worth considering importing. Although, oddly enough, the Wii game Extraction is out in Japan.
Yeah, I've seen the Japanese box art for that during my import shopping. It's definitely out there.
But the main series games are not. So those I think they are most definitely worth seeking. Okay, well, thank you very much for the email, Minora. That was a pretty interesting question, and we definitely appreciate everything else you said, too. So we've got a couple more emails to go, but Billy has to run. He's got to do important business. So, Billy, thank you very, very much for being here. I really appreciate it, man.
Thanks for having me, and when, you know, Lindy flakes next week, I would love to come back. It's a lot of fun.
So we have our new cast member here, because Lindemann is going to be dead for not showing up next week.
John's just doing his Brett Favre routine. He's just going to wait till the last week of training camp.
I'm not going into the podcast with Tavares Jackson. I'm sorry.
But if he thinks me and James are going to get on a plane to drag his ass out of bed, that is not happening.
Come on, get on the plane. Get on the plane. Let's go. No. I get on the plane to smother him with a pillow.
So, hey, just real quick, I do have one quick question, though. Since you guys do play a lot of the DSiWare and stuff like that, if I was right now going to go get a DSiWare game...
Dark Void Zero.
I think Shantae is probably the high watermark for the DSiWare.
I agree.
Okay.
But in terms of what Billy will like, I think Dark Void Zero is a very, very good place to start.
Yep, and I played another WayForward. I've started playing another WayForward DSiWare game, their latest and presumably last one, Mighty Milky Way, which is pretty cool. I'll be talking about it next week.
Okay.
But look some videos up on it. It's kind of a puzzle platform thing involving 2D gameplay going around planetoids.
And milk.
No, nothing to do with milk. It's pretty cool.
I will I'll keep my eye out, but thanks a lot, guys, for having me on, and we'll see you next week.
All right, man. Thanks very much. So, James has the next letter.
It's from Anonymous, and this unknown person writes, "Hello, RFN. I have been listening to your show for the past 3 years, and rarely do I hear you guys talk about the Fire Emblem series. What do you guys think about the series, and why do you like it / not like it? Greg, since you have a super family calm, have you played the older Fire Emblems? And if you have, what do you think about them? Also, aside from Advanced Wars, What other games, like Fire Emblem, that you would recommend for a Fire Emblem fan? The only game I have played with similarities was Metal Gear Acid, and that wasn't exactly what I was hoping for. Thanks for reading, and I hope you can help me.
That's too bad Billy had to leave. I think he's a pretty big fan of Fire Emblem.
So, I've played the first Fire Emblem game on the SNES.
Ooh. Oh, really? I mean, because I've always sort of put off by the sense that, you know, it would be really difficult
to... It was in fucking Japanese, and my Japanese was a lot better then than it is now.
Well, mine has remained static at shite.
Well, to be fair, it was a lot better then than it is now. I could read the menus. It's about the extent of my capacity to understand what was going on in that game. But this was before we got the first GBA game. So I was aware of the Fire Emblem series only because of Smash Brothers. And found it to be utterly impenetrable. Primarily because I didn't understand what was going on and had no compulsion to continue. Except so my character, whose name I couldn't necessarily figure out what it was, wouldn't die.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. Obviously... I had a Super Famicom back in the day, but now, with the Japanese Virtual Console, I have access to very many downloadable games that, you know, have got a great pedigree behind them. And for instance, the Ogre Battle, the Super Famicom Tactics Ogre game.
Don't toy with my heart, Greg.
That's been ported to the PSP, recently remade.
Right.
But, you know, that's on the Japanese Virtual Console, Fire Emblem's on there. There's a lot of RPGs and strategy RPGs that are on there, but the language barrier is just too much for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's in a game like that, it's dense. But to back to the basic premise of the letter, I actually do enjoy the Fire Emblem series for all the rage it can inflict on you as you're playing it. I've played two of the GBAs, the GameCube game, and for whatever reason never got around to the Wii game.
It was quite soon after the GameCube.
It felt very soon. I was always like, well, I'm not quite ready for this game.
It was like a year later. It was literally pretty soon after the GameCube.
And it had such a similar name as well, wasn't it? It
was Radiant like Dawn and
Radiant Dawn and Path of Radiance, like,
yeah. It,
way to emphasize the difference.
Yeah, and also, it's pretty much the same game.
It's a sequel. It's like the sequeliest sequel ever.
Yeah, and it's also a GameCube game on a Wii disc.
Yeah, it is.
It's not really a Wii game any more than Twilight Princess is. It's actually less than Twilight Princess.
When I played the GameCube game, I played it very late. Actually, the Wii might have already launched, or it had just about to launch. And then when the GameCube game on Wii came out, I was pretty much burned out at that point, and didn't come back around. I do enjoy the series, but I actually don't find structurally it's similar to the Advance Wars games, but I don't really play them the same.
Yeah, but that's the thing, because obviously I've played Advance Wars, and I like that.
Right.
And so I've been interested in sort of picking a Fire Emblem to get into, and it seems like that everyone says that maybe the first GBA game is the best way to go.
Yeah, I would agree.
But the problem with that is it's bloody hard to procure. That
really?
Seems to be very rare compared to, you know, even Sacred Stones, which came later.
Right.
And just most GBA games seem to be easier to get hold of.
Greg, you know, maybe you'll be getting a free copy of it soon.
Exactly. That's right. With the Ambassador Program.
That's right.
Could potentially go in alongside...
With your diplomatic immunity.
Could potentially go alongside Fusion and all that. But, I mean, in terms of the differences between the two series, obviously, the big thing is, you know, in Advance Wars, you play with these, you know, sort of faceless units that are mass-produced, you know, resource management and that
right.
way is a big thing. Whereas, you know, because it's a tactical RPG or whatever, here your units are characters that, you know, they have roles to play in the story, and you build them up, and... if they die, they're gone for good. And that's really the sort of rage-inducing element of the series that you sort of spoke to earlier.
So we actually discussed one of these games during one of our retroactives in Shining Force.
Yeah. Shining Force 2.
Yeah. I can't remember if both Shining Force and 2 are available on the Virtual Console.
I think both are, but 2 is widely considered to be a vast
improvement. Oh, no, it's a better game. But still, I mean... I would play 1, then 2, so at least you get the chance to play both of them without being spoiled by 2.
Well, I would say, James, I would one-up you and say we've played at least 2 games that would be recommendable I think Ogre Battle 3, Ogre Battle 64 is...
Well, see, I was going to get into that kind of as a discussion of the Ogre Battle versus Tactics Ogre.
Either way, because neither one is exactly like Fire Emblem, but they're both close enough that you should probably give them a shot.
I would say Tactics Ogre is closer, though.
It seems that way, yeah.
And that would also expand the scope to the Final Fantasy Tactics games.
That's right. And Gladius, which is a GameCube game that's a pretty straight knockoff of the Tactics games.
And then, of course, there's also the Tactics Advance games. And then you have Tactics Advance A2 on the DS. Fuck you and your naming conventions. And then there's the Ghost Recon game on the 3DS.
That's right, yeah. Shadow Wars.
Yes. Ubisoft probably owes Nintendo some money for that game. There's also series that I've talked about, the various Nippon Ichi series that they do for their tactical games. Disgaea and Phantom Brave.
Yeah.
Phantom Brave's actually a little bit closer because it's more about the development of individual characters versus this kind of like, these are just your generic types of enemies. Like, you're building characters from the ground up.
Yeah, well, on that vein, you got Front Mission, and then also, would you say Sakura Wars?
No, I wouldn't say Sakura Wars. Okay. Not really.
I don't know how the battle works in that game, really. But
Front Mission, yes. I adore Front Mission.
Of course, the most recent Fire Emblem game that's come out over here, or in America, is Shadow Dragon for the DS.
Which is the first fucking
It's a remake of the first game of the series. I know John has got that.
He bought it for like $4.
Yeah, he got it very, very cheap.
I wouldn't hold your breath for that one in New Business.
Well, he did bring it up in New Business, but I wouldn't hold my breath for a reprise, certainly. But James, you weren't tempted by that? For me, everyone seemed to be so confident that the GBA game was better, that it was like, even though Shadow Dragon was a lot more attainable, it's like, I don't want to settle for less.
I just wasn't in a position to procure it at that time. I was literally at work when I heard about it, and then this deal was kind of over when I got the chance to buy it.
Oh, yeah, when it was really cheap, yeah.
Yeah. I would have bought it if I could have gotten away with it at work. Let's put it that way. Like, Shadow Dragon, though, as I understand it, is a bit primitive. I mean, think that, but it's not a true... They didn't really remake the games to make it significantly less primitive. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it seems like they did a certain amount to it, but
right.
Not...
They didn't give it the full one over. But, yeah, so getting back to the discussion of the Ogre Battles games, they're out there. They're a bit more micromanage-y, but there's two of those on... Really, the Virtual Console is kind of a nice place for you right now, if this is what you're looking for.
Yeah, so we gave you a lot of options. I never answered the original question, which is, what do I think of the series? Quite frankly, I've never played a Fire Emblem game more than for a few minutes, just kind of borrowing somebody's copy and just kind of trying it out.
That's kind of...
I know, it's weird, and I don't have a good reason. I just never...
How did you avoid reviewing one? I mean, there were like four or five in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah, it was bunched up together, wasn't it?
Yeah, I never got one, and I've played Advance Wars, which I like plenty. So I think I would like Fire Emblem. I just never did buy one.
You loved Final Fantasy Tactics.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
for
so
sure.
The biggest thing about Fire Emblem as a series is, as I alluded to, the rage button. And that can really turn people off the game. Mm. Because you get to the very end of a challenging level, and then all of a sudden, whoop, Archer's dead. And your only choice is to start over again, or just continue on without that person. And
yeah,
I think that
was one thing they kind of modified or fudged a bit with Shadow Dragon to make it a bit more approachable, maybe, for people.
I think they did the same for the GameCube game. I think there's kind of a way out if...
I don't recall there being one.
I played the demo. I was at Nintendo in Redmond and played... Path of Radiance, and that's probably the most I've ever played Fire Emblem, and I've liked it. It was a lot to take in a short demo, because there's a lot of rules and there's a lot of structure that go into a game like that, but I was pretty impressed by it and thought that I would probably end up playing the final version, and then never did. So if you guys, it sounds like you guys would recommend the first one on GBA, but I would also say the first one on GameCube is probably somewhere that I would look as an entry point.
I have no issue with being that as your entry point. I think the first one on GameCube is actually a little bit easier than the GBA titles.
Hey, that sounds good.
Yeah, I mean, for me, portable is always going to have the advantage.
Yeah. That's not as much of an issue for me. So
I seem to recall Sacred Stones being kind of a bitch. Like a lot of these like long range archers that would blast you from across the screen at the very end of the level. You bastards.
All right, well, Greg has the final letter.
Zoe writes, I have been a passionate fan of the Smash series since the 64 and have been both pressed with new character rivals, Marth, Snake, and also sometimes disappointed, Dr. Mario Ganondorf, aka Captain Falcon Clone. Either way, it's always exciting to hear about new arrivals to the Smash Bros. Series, and with the apparent availability of third-party brawlers, who do you think would make an awesome addition to the series, and maybe what kind of moves they would have?
The last time I was asked this question was at E3 2006, when they first showed Brawl in the Nintendo round table type thing. They had Sakurai there, and this was the year that they'd shown all this pretty casual looking Wii software. It was the first time we'd ever seen a Wii game. It was the same day. So they showed Red Steel and Wii Music and Wii Sports, and that was the kind of stuff they were showing at the press conference. And then that night they had they revealed Smash Brothers Brawl at this press conference that a fairly small group of people. I remember this very distinctly because I was sitting next to Tycho from Penny Arcade, and I think I was sitting between him and Chris Kohler. So it was kind of a special feeling, and these are people I looked up to, and I got to talk with them a little bit. And we were sitting like in the front row or maybe the second row of the theater, and Sakurai comes out there, and we realize they're about to show the Smash Brothers that everybody was hoping to see earlier in the presentation at the press conference. And so they showed the trailer. I'm sure you guys all remember the trailer, and they revealed that Snake was in there. They actually kind of showed two trailers. They showed the game trailer announcement, and then they showed the Snake trailer. And that was really exciting. And then at one point, while they're doing the roundtable thing, Sakurai kind of asks the audience, who would you like to see? And I was the first person to answer, and I said, Sonic! I said it really loudly. And you could actually hear the audience go, ooh, like I'd said something really controversial. Of course, he turned out to be in the game. I thought it was kind of the obvious pick. And, I think most of the really obvious picks have already been done. They've been pretty damn comprehensive, but
obviously the Nintendo characters are pretty well traveled at this point, and there's not necessarily a whole lot of new characters that are going to have been invented between mm-hmm. Brawl and its successor.
But with Snake and Sonic, you can look outside of that. I do have some ideas.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the main thing I would look to, the sort of other characters that I think are going to be best suited is not so much something like Sonic. I mean, Sonic is obvious, because it's like when worlds collide kind of thing, the great divide of the 16-bit era sort of fixed. But for me, I think the best ones would be the guys that back in the 8-bit era were synonymous with Nintendo, despite the fact that they weren't Nintendo games.
Right.
So Simon Belmont, he was in Captain N or whatever, you could have him, you could have a Castlevania level, think about the musical possibilities that opens up. That for me is a must if you're going to go, they've already done Snake from Konami, so it seems perfectly doable. Mega Man.
Yeah, Mega Man's the obvious one here.
Mega Man is just perfect for it, surely. I mean, there's a lot of Capcom guys, actually, they've already been in Capcom fighting games, but, I would look at Mega Man, I would look at Nathan Spencer from Bionic Commando would be another one that could be cool.
I didn't realize he had a name.
Well, I think it's Lad or Rad Spencer, depending on.
Right. Yeah,
they retconned it to say that Rad is his nickname.
Yeah,
that's a fucking terrible nickname.
But they call him Nathan Spencer now, don't they? Just stuff that people, they think Nintendo in the 8-bit,
like classic Nintendo.
They still thought they're these guys. I think that's. That would be my sort of first choice. And then, you could probably, Snake, there was Metal Gear on the NES, but I don't know whether he's so, associated with the PlayStation and stuff, that him and Sonic were more like, someone, a PlayStation guy and a Sega guy kind of coming in, it was that angle.
Right. Mega Man for me obviously was my pick, because for me that's sort of like, well, first off, I'm still in mourning, but that is my... I own a lot of Mega Man stuff, so passing that down.
And again, if they have a Mega Man stage, the music possibilities are pretty cool to think about.
They're pretty much beyond contemplation at this point. Just, I would pass out from joy.
I tried to think about characters who might fit in with the gameplay of Smash Brothers, and I think I thought of both Simon Belmont or any Belmont and Mega Man, both in those terms, because I think the Belmonts would probably be in the vein of Link. And I'm not saying they should be a clone, but I'm saying that in that tier probably of a character who has a lot of projectiles, but also some a couple of melee attacks.
Because, you know, I mean, you'd have like the whip. I mean, I guess that could work somewhat similarly to the way that Zero Suit Samus uses it.
Yeah.
But then you could have the cross, the holy water, mm-hmm. you know, the classic.
Ooh, cross, that might not fly in a Nintendo game. He'd have to have his stick.
Well, you give him the axe instead.
I think Square Enix might play ball on this because they've...
Well, I mean, Nintendo are very chummy with them these days.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Dragon Quest in particular, we've got the Fortune Street thing coming up. They've done the basketball and Mario Sports Mix and all.
Yep.
The, you know, a slime of some sort.
I was actually thinking more on the Chrono end of things because I think he would fit in well in the combat system that they've devised.
Oh, wow.
Of course, he'd just be another generic swordsman, but...
Yeah, I actually had written down Cecil or Terra. Because I think those are being kind of iconic Final Fantasy characters, whereas Dragon Quest doesn't... I mean, yes, Slime is one thing. It would be hard to make Slime into a Smash Brothers character, maybe a Sys trophy.
Yeah, but he'd be like a comedy character, wouldn't he? He'd be like Game & Watch, you know, one of these guys where it doesn't really make sense, but that's they try and make a joke out of it.
See, to me, if they're going to do another comedy character, I really want it to be the character from Joymac Fight, because that's actually a fighting game, and Sukpon is kind of awesome.
That would be good.
Yeah, Chrono is a good choice.
Yeah, Chrono. Well, I think Chrono, again, the musical possibilities. And, you know, if they could have more than one character, Magus as a baddie.
Oh, yeah, Magus would be awesome.
The problem with using the Final Fantasy characters is they rely heavily on spells and things, which might not be so easy to do in that game.
I mean, look at Ness.
Yeah, Lucas. But he projects things out more than just, like, you're suddenly engulfed in a fireball.
Zelda, I don't think that's a hindrance, really. The hindrance is representing those characters in the modern graphic style. You'd have to kind of go back to the Amano character art, you know, and use that as more of the source. But
they already did that with some characters anyway, so. See, that's why they should do Sukpon, because he's just some pink blobs. He'll fit in just fine.
So this is the only other, like, quasi third party pick I had down, but this is so out of left field. Nobody would ever see this, and probably everybody will think this is a bad idea. But I think I kind of like the Taj character from Diddy Kong Racing. I think he would fit.
Oh God, I forgot he existed.
I think he would fit well in Smash Brothers. He just kind of, you know, he's similar to other characters they already have, like King Dedede, you know, stuff like that. I think he has a magic carpet. He's an elephant. He talks. I think you could probably work up a pretty good move set and animate him in an entertaining way. But that character is owned by Microsoft now. Seems very unlikely they'd put him in a console game. So
yeah. I mean, a couple more things. I mean, definitely on the 8-bit tip from third parties, Arthur from Ghosts and Goblins. Again, he's been in Marvel vs. Capcom now. And Firebrand is in Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom.
How cool
3.
Is that? Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm on that train. Definitely.
So, what was the game that Nintendo put out? You played it once before from the NES on your virtual console, Greg, that it was like a crap, what was it? It was like a samurai game.
Oh, Nazo no Murasamacho.
Yeah.
Legend of Mysterious Castle, or something, I think it translates to. Yeah, I mean, that's probably a bit. They had music in Brawl from that.
So they did.
They've tapped it before a little bit. It was basically the sort of strictly action spin off of the Zelda engine that they had on a Famicom in Japan. I'm not sure that you could have that little character as a viable spec. There's a couple of Nintendo guys I think would be, you know, ahead of the line for that. For instance, Little Mac.
Actually, I'll do you one better. King Hippo would be much better as a Smash Brothers character than Little Mac.
You could just dispense with Little Mac and go to one of the villains, and King Hippo, again, you know, I talked about like how Belmont is in Captain N. Well, King Hippo is most definitely in Captain
and
N.
And so was Mega Man. Yeah. I thought about villains a lot because I think the villains are not as well represented in Smash Brothers as the heroes are. So I also think Dark Samus would be pretty interesting because she has... I know Dark Samus is technically Metroid Prime, but Dark Samus as that embodiment, I think, would be pretty fun as a variant on Samus with quite different moves, really. All the lightning stuff and the somewhat limited flight ability and maybe kind of like a melting ability. You can melt into the floor or something like that.
Oh, Glacius and Killer Instinct.
Yeah. And then King Hippo fit into that. Waluigi, I think, is probably my number one. I know people don't like Waluigi. They think he's a thin character. He's a thin character because Nintendo doesn't use him enough. I mean, this is a character whose primary development is probably in that intro video to Mario Power Tennis on GameCube. I think Waluigi needs another chance. They need to give him a chance to shine and to develop as his own character. And I don't know what his moves would be. It's carte blanche. Nintendo, make it happen. Figure out, this is your chance to actually turn Waluigi into an actual character. I think he would be super fun and fits the visual style perfectly. And
I think they should be like really ironic and keep Luigi exactly the same and give the vacuum to Waluigi. I don't know whether it would work necessarily, but you know, another sort of cute Nintendo character that's emerged is Chibi-Robo.
Mm.
It'd be kind of interesting if they could make him work as a Smash Brothers character.
Yeah, he's got the toothbrush and the... Yeah, he could... Oh, totally. He could whip people with his plug. Although he would never do that because he's too cute, but...
He's got the helicopter thing as well, hasn't he? Like, that could be his get-back move.
But, I mean, in his name, it's implicit he's small. So he would have
so
to
so
actually...
Kirby is technically, like, an inch tall or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, and Olimar is... Come on, that's not... There's no scale in Smash Brothers.
Their toys come to life. They're not even the actual characters. Yeah. You don't have to play that game.
I still think they'd have to make him smaller than most of the other characters.
Yeah, he would look small, but he would look as small as Olimar.
Olimar's tiny, so that works. Okay, I have one more idea. This is really strange, but hang with me. I think I can make it work. How about an Excitebot?
I'm out. I'll see y'all later.
They transform, they have hang gliders.
His special skill is to rotate on a bar.
Yeah, they spin on things, they have legs, they have some personality, and they're fast. So it could be like a speed character. You know, it has moves where it pops out wheels and it can race across, but also you can still kind of awkwardly walk around on it, on its insect legs, and then it can pop out the hang glider thing. I think it could work. And it also throws bowling balls.
If you could do actual vehicles, I'd quite like to see the Fire Stingray itself. And,
okay, that's... Come on, that thing doesn't actually animate, though. That's a lot harder to do.
No, but he, like, could pop his head out of the thing and swing his sword or something.
Samurai Goro, I could see working. I mean, he was an assist trophy in Brawl. If you're going to choose another F-Zero character, he's probably the natural one. But I think Excitebot would be one of the... one of those truly strange ideas that Sakurai likes to throw in there, like Rob.
It'd be like... Wasn't there the Sega fighting game with a car? As one of the characters in it.
Oh, yeah, it's one of the, it's like Fighting Vipers, or no, it's a Fighters Mega Mix, like the really weird one. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it has happened before, so, I mean, there is that.
It totally has, like, in that Smash Brothers clone for GameCube, the one that never came out of Japan, it has Optimus Prime in it.
Yeah.
It also has Solid Snake, but, it has Optimus Prime, and he is really fun to use, actually, because you could just kind of transform in midair and race across the stage. It's similar to Wario on the bike.
Right. I mean, the one thing, obviously, would seem like a natural extension is to have Yami as some sort of character.
Oh.
Certainly Nintendo's biggest hits, in this era have featured Miis. But there's the other sort of wrinkle in it that some of the very early, and we must stress just how early this is, just on the basis of what Sakurai and Iwata have said personally, that, you know, the game isn't really in the development stages yet. It's scarcely in the planning stages.
Right.
But some of the hints that Sakurai has dropped of the idea of having a Wii U game and a 3DS game is almost akin to Mario Golf on Game Boy Advance and GameCube, in that you might have a one-player kind of deal, presumably multiplayer as well, but on the handheld version you might have a one-player element where you're building up a character, and then you could export that character to use in the console version.
Hmm.
And what would be more natural as, like, your character to build up than a Mii? I mean, it does seem like that would make quite a lot of sense, but maybe you could, like, wouldn't necessarily have to be a Mii, or you could pick something else if you wanted.
So you heard it here first, the new Smash Bros. Game is being developed by Camelot Systems.
Well, it could be ideas from it.
I mean, any of the Camelot characters from their games, obviously, are open season at this point.
Golden Sun, yeah.
They were featured in Brawl, and they have released a new Golden Sun game, kind of.
I can't imagine a more bland choice, though. I mean,
yeah,
really,
I know,
Isaac,
but I mean,
whatever his name is,
they've at this point they've or not Isaac as the new one as I referred to him. I mean, if you want to go not bland, they could put Captain Rainbow in.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Full on crazy.
Well, while we're on the skip tip, I would like to propose a stage, which would be the Orbient stage, where you're jumping around on all these planets as they orbit each other and start to absorb each other. So like your platform disappears because it just got eaten by another planet, and it's like all nice. Super trippy music and sound effects and everything.
Well, it did an Electroplankton stage, so I mean,
exactly.
It's not like, or they could have like an art style medley.
Oh
stage.
Yeah, there you go. The art style stage.
Why don't we just go straight up Raymond Bruce Disaster?
Oh, Disaster.
The tornado from Disaster, specifically.
Yeah, the bear.
Just the bear.
The tornado is the assist trophy.
The final smash. The bear summons the tornado as the final smash. And you know, the disaster level would be pretty ridiculous. It's like, it's an earthquake. It's a volcanic eruption.
It's a bear in a truck. Look out. Actually, you know what? I don't need Ray. I just need a disaster level.
Here's another idea. They could do a Mario Galaxy level where the gravity's actually wrapped around
I think that's inevitable.
Yeah, that would be amazing. If they did a Galaxy level where you actually had the planetoids that you bashed them up. They left the stage when you knocked them hard enough that they actually went out of orbit. That would be
right,
great.
Right, like you can't fall off the stage, but you could still be knocked off.
I think the only risk is the New Pork City effect where the stage is just big.
If it's too big, they've got to be careful with that, because then the games take ages as if you played Survival.
Well, that's right. In New Pork City, you can just run away from somebody the whole level.
But it's, again, soundtrack-wise, God, you could have some fun.
Yeah.
Oh, anyone associated with Sin and Punishment. There you go.
I don't know.
You don't think so?
It's not going to happen, but it would be pretty cool. Wait, is there like an assist trophy?
There's an assist trophy, yeah, but I don't think Sin and Punishment will ever get beyond that.
See, because I feel like it would fit well in the game, though.
It might do, but it's just like, I don't know. The problem with Sin and Punishment is...
Soggy's obnoxious?
Well, I think a lot of people that are massive fans of that game, like me... couldn't give two shits about the characters. And then obviously most people are not massive fans of the game, so they don't give two shits about the characters.
Right.
So that's everyone does not give a shit about the characters.
It's true. Nobody likes them because they're just annoying.
A Sin and Punishment stage is the better choice, where you could have some fucking crazy...
How about in a Sin and Punishment stage, everyone gets jetpacks?
But imagine if you had a stage based on the aircraft carrier sequence.
That's exactly the one I was thinking of.
Because they've done it with stuff like the Halberd and all that kind of stuff already. You know, where you're on a flying platform and it's just going around all this crazy stuff that's happening. That I could... Again, they've done an Electroplankton stage, so...
There you go. Endless Ocean stage.
They did
stage.
A PictoChat stage.
That stage is
amazing.
There are no limits on these guys' creativity.
The PictoChat stage is amazing.
Yeah, I think they can sometimes be a little bit conservative on the characters, but in terms of the stages, I have utter faith
nuts.
In the Smash Brothers team.
The WarioWare stage. That stage makes people crazy.
Yeah,
they could do a Rhythm Heaven stage now.
Ooh. Oh, God.
I like.
See, I feel like if they just... take what they've already done and just kind of port the character profiles over. I mean, obviously they'll need to redo the graphics on these systems. They sort of have reached that point where they're going to have to start going crazy.
They kind of already did in Brawl, though. I mean, they're going to get more crazy, but...
Yeah, I mean, I do think... To be honest, though, I think, you know, the other issue with the character roster is simply volume.
Yeah.
You know, there's a limit.
Well, I mean, you do run the Marvel versus Capcom risk, where you've got 70 characters and nobody knows how to...
Well, as you like to say, Greg, all the time, there will be cuts.
Yeah, exactly. So I think maybe some will go away that we already have and be replaced by more distinct characters. But, you know, I think there's a limit on how big it can grow. So if you want to represent other franchises, something like Sin and Punishment or some of these other ones like WarioWare, you know, like you already have a Wario character, but that's another kind of game. It's a completely different kind of game. And so you have a stage that represents how different it is. You know, I think there's a lot more room for growth in stages than there is in characters at this point.
For sure. Okay, well, that was fun. So we're going to have to wrap up the show now. Be sure to send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Don't forget, we are going to be playing Killer 7. God help us all. So be sure to track down your copy and go check out the forum thread where we're going to be discussing it, and you could have your forum comment read on the show when we get around to that game. So thanks again to Billy for showing up. Too bad he couldn't stay for the whole time, but we got him for a lot longer than last time. So I really had a great time talking with Billy, as always, and I think he brought a lot to the episode. So I do want to thank him in absentia. And we have a few plugs, actually. Greg, I just got done today listening to your appearance on Radio Trivia with TYP, and I have to say, quite honestly, as a co-creator of that format of that show, I think you kind of knocked it out of the park, man. I thought it was one of the best episodes I've heard in quite a while.
Well, you know, I always try and put a lot of effort into it.
Take that, other people.
Because I get one shot, though.
Like Eminem. Yes.
I got to bring it for that particular episode, so I'm glad to hear Panda. But, you know, I will offer one game perhaps as a bit of extra incentive for anyone that's not yet heard it, because it's bloody well easy to guess anyway, but we had it in there for the music. It's DKC Returns. We talk about the soundtrack to that and play three very good songs from it. So just little tease, if you're on the fence, that's definitely worth the price of entry, which is nothing. I had a lot of fun doing it, and I look forward to doing it again whenever that may be.
Let's see. I just put out an episode of Discover Music Project with Carl, who you'll probably hear in a couple weeks for Retroactive. So you can hear us talk about Neil Young. That was a listener request, and I think it turned out really well. And we just recorded finally recorded a Box Office Poison as well. And that's all former RFN people, plus John Rend. And we talked about The Cooler. That was the movie of the month by Mike Sklenz. That was his choice. And then I announced my choice for next month, which is Return to Oz. And I think that is going to be really fun to talk about.
Is that the one with Feroza Balkan as a kid?
Yes, it is. Yeah. There's a lot to say about Return to Oz. It is a strange movie, so I can't wait for that. But yeah, I also talk about, we talk about some comic book movies and some other big stuff, Harry Potter. So there's a lot of fun stuff over there if you like movies, and that's all over at acrosstalk.com. And, newscast, of course. It's every week now, so I don't always remember to say something about it because it's just a fact of life. But, they recently brought over, a new guy, Scott Thompson, and, they are doing a great job over there, so be sure to check that out as well. And that's the end of our show. So thank you very much for listening, and, we'll see you next week, hopefully with John in tow.
Or never again.
Give me one sec. I'm checking the Retroactive results. I'm pretty sure I know how it came out, but
they came out wrong.
Objectively wrong, right, James? It's your favorite phrase.
James, only a Sith deals in absolutes.
You cannot say that the gameplay in Killer 7 is actually functional as a game.
It's such a nerd burn. Oh, my God.
It's because I'll never get the chance to use those quotes now. That was my whole thing, was if it was going to be Rogue Leader.
You're lucky, because if it had been Rogue Leader, I was just going to drop a bunch of Anakin quotes from Episode 1 on you. So
how many times can you say yippee?
I can just keep saying oops over and over and over again.
RW writes, with Nintendo's recent financial shockwaves, it's obvious the 3DS, which ironically was originally rushed to launch to appease their shareholders, has put a tremendous burden on the company. Be it because of smartphone competition, lack of software, 3D party support, a hefty price, or perhaps the market's...
Third party support.
What'd I say?
3D party support.
Shit. 3D party support.
That game hasn't come out yet. It's coming later.
I wish they had some of that. Okay.
Front page 98.
I never use front page. I never learned it.
Oh, it's a piece of shit. And it makes absolute horrible code, but that's how Planet N 2000 began.
It was in 2000 HQ at first, like the first yes. day or whatever.
Yeah, and then I changed my mind about a lot of things really quickly with no thoughts of consequence.
Yeah.
We should have Louis as the rumors editor, and he can speak Jive. That sounds great. Let's do it.
What, then you had to write it?
Oh, it was fine. It was fine the first couple.
Oh, man, I wrote some of the Jive, Louis, and I think I was actually the person who was probably most strongly pushed for cleaning up Louis's language, because I actually found it almost painful to write.
Well, I do remember we got to a point where I think there was just a post from Louis that was like, "Hey, I went to school, I understand English, we're good, done."
Yeah,
and that was the end of it.
Because I was like, "Look, I can't handle this anymore. If I'm writing this stuff, I just it took an hour to write the article and then another hour to Louis-ize it."
And finally, we have a feel-good editorial from James Charlton called Why I'm Excited for the Wii U. It's about why he's excited for the Wii U.
Shocking. I would have never guessed that. Thanks to your scriptwriting skills, Johnny, for clearing that up. I long for the John scripts, because at least they weren't that.
You say that now.
It would have been a dick joke, but at least it would have been different.
So you're telling me you long for dick. That's just what I'm hearing from this.
Well, you know, after a long, hard day at work.
Oh, God.